Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to the latest Behind the Bets podcast, taping an early podcast this week. We're doing a little football recap with Mr. Director John Murray later on to preview the conference championship games. But right now, we're going to have Brett Okamoto to preview UFC Fight Night. What number are we on? 143. So a couple interesting matchups. Brett Okamoto, UFC insider, will join us momentarily. I go way back with him, so always good to connect with a friend. And Kai, I was a little concerned. You're very authentic when I came into the recording studio and you were holding a bat.
Yeah, you always have to stay in character. I knew this was an MMA show, so you never know, man. It might be a luchador that just creeps in the studio. Who knows?
Method actor that you are. You hadn't met Brett, so I can see how you're a little concerned. You didn't know what to expect with a guy who's immersed in the MMA space.
Yeah, you know, I connected with him, obviously, during the five rounds days a couple of times, but you never know. Stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Stay ready. I like it. All right, man, let's get to it.
Kicking is for losers.
Only in football, not in the UFC. We now welcome in UFC insider Brett Okamoto, a buddy of mine who I've known over a decade. And here he is live in studio.
Love it. Yeah. Nice sitting across the table from you instead of being on the phone, Doug.
Yeah. And it's usually we used to start across the dining table back in those UFC buffets, which are great spreads, by the way, for anyone who has a opportunity to be a media member out in Vegas. You know, you have some hesitation there.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe the buffets have changed or maybe I've changed, but I don't hit the buffets like I used to.
You have a higher level. Your palate is, well, we did break bread in Brooklyn. What was it, a year ago, 2 years ago? 2 years ago. No, a year ago.
Man, I can't remember. Yeah.
Was it
around the Conor McGregor thing?
Yeah, it was before that, though, I think. Yeah, maybe it was.
So that was only April. That was less than a year ago.
So basically, I was in New York just by coincidence, and our mutual friends out in the UFC industry posting stories, and they're like, God, you guys are already here. It was like a Wednesday.
Yeah.
So I sent you a text and we all broke bread. It was good. It's good to connect in person again.
I think that was the night before. That was the night before Conor McGregor threw a dolly through
the
a bus
truck.
Window. And yeah, that was the biggest story of the year.
Kai, you're not planning anything crazy, are you?
Nah.
Had a bat in your hand earlier.
Well, yeah, that was just for protection. That wasn't for plotting.
Yeah, we don't know what to expect here when the MMA guy is in town. So in Bristol, we got a huge snowstorm coming Sunday, I believe, or at least really cold and some snow. So good luck up there in Brooklyn. We're down there, I should say.
Yeah, I always forget how cold it is here every single time. And I feel like I only come here during the winter. I don't know why ESPN loves to book me and travel to Bristol in winter, but I've never seen summer in Bristol. It's always winter.
Yeah, well, you're not missing much either. Maybe get Dana White to plant a card out in Nantucket or something like that, Cape Cod.
I'll tell him to keep him in Vegas.
All right. Well, good to have you in studio, man. Let's break down the card. Obviously, it's very interesting. UFC Fight Night in Brooklyn. Interesting matchups. We're going to talk about it from a betting angle, but you always sort of glean wisdom, and I talked about this the last time you were on the podcast, and I remember back in the day. Now, I think the odds are much sharper now than they were a decade ago. You could go to these fights and whisper, like, how on earth is this the line? But anything jump out to you early on when you look at the betting lines of this card?
I mean, like you said, it's going to be very, very rare that a betting line just completely catches you off guard because and usually if it does, you're the one that's wrong. You know, I mean, because like you said, the odds, I mean, they can't afford to be wrong, you know, so. No, nothing on this card strikes me as crazy or wrong. You know, I will say that, you know, right there in the co-main event, you have Greg Hardy, a 5-1 favorite. I mean, the guy he's fighting, yeah, he should beat him. And Greg Hardy is everything that we've seen out of the guy says that he could be a phenom in this sport. But he's fought guys who don't have a lot of experience. He's spent less than 3 minutes in the cage total in his professional career. I mean, he turned pro last year with very little experience. He's being rushed. You know,
there's a lot of unknowns there is what you're saying.
There's a lot of unknowns to be going at 5-1 favorite. And then on top of that, in the heavyweight division, I never want to take big favorites anyway, because it just takes one shot. I mean, you could be winning in a fight for the entire time and then just boom, one big sloppy overhand right. And your guy goes down.
That's really all weight classes, no?
It is all weight classes, but of course it's more high variance in heavyweight because you got guys who are you know, throwing the haymakers.
So Crowder at plus 400 if we're looking at the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook odds. I want to talk about the stakes that are on the line with the division, right? Is it flyweights on the line?
That's the storyline, Doug, but I don't know how much I really put into that. Yeah.
Ooh, scoop here.
Well, I mean, if this is a betting podcast, so I don't think I'll go into like a ton of detail unless you want it, sure. If you're curious. But sure. Yeah, I mean, the UFC basically made the decision that they're getting rid of the flyweight division, okay? But they made that decision before they told the flyweight champion that, Henry Cejudo. And so I think in their mind, they're like, okay, great. You know, we got Henry Cejudo. He's the flyweight champion. He'll move up in weight. He'll fight TJ Dillashaw. Well, then they come to realize that Henry Cejudo wants more money to do that. You know, he wants a big contract. He says, hey, if I'm moving up in weight, I'm giving up a belt. I deserve a bigger payday. And then on top of that, TJ Dillashaw wanted to go down to 125 because he wants to be a two-weight champion. He sees value in that. So I think the circumstances played into, well, I know that the circumstances played into this fight being at 125 pounds. As far as the long-term stakes of the division, whether Cejudo wins or loses, the flyweight division is going away, in my opinion.
Gotcha.
So it's a nice storyline to follow.
So
it's kind of a fun one.
The betting
Hopefully, I'm not ruining anybody's, you know, day telling them that that's not really what this fight is about. But me personally, that's not how I see it.
All right. So Dillashaw minus 200 favorite over Cejudo. Over under 4.5 rounds with the over minus 135. So this is expected to go the distance.
It is expected to go to the distance. I'd be interested in taking the under. I would. I mean, TJ's a finisher. I mean, that's what makes him entertaining. I love watching TJ Dillashaw fight, and it's because he hits you with things you don't see coming, and that's what knock you out. And Henry Cejudo, what, you know, and one thing about TJ Dillashaw is that in order to hit you with some of those things that you don't see coming and to make the fight entertaining, he puts himself at risk, you know, and so he puts himself in some potentially bad spots sometimes just with his hands down or changing his stance in the middle of an exchange. He could get clipped, and Cejudo has got some power and he's got some real fast hands, and we don't know how the weight cut is going to affect TJ Dillashaw on the night of the fight. So I would, I'd take a shot on the under of that.
At minus 135, I don't see how you could bet the over. I'm not saying the under is a lock, but like, given the nature of the sport and all the variables that you mentioned, I don't know how you could bet over and lay 135.
Well, that's interesting that you've got a really high total to begin with on 4.5. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not talking about 2.5. We're talking already that, like, essentially they're saying the fight's going to go the distance. And then you got to lay money to do it. Yeah, I would definitely look under.
I mean, it's under or pass, right? Watch it go the distance and stalemate.
Of course. But, you know, that's you could say that about any bet, you know. I mean, that's why it's gambling, right? But
sure.
So we don't know for sure. But I will say that you got two guys who are going to be active. You've got two guys who have the ability to finish a fight. You know, some of these guys in the UFC, and this is not really a knock on them, but they're just not finishers. They don't really have that that strong finishing capability. Holly Holm is a good example. She's a phenomenal fighter, but that really strong, I mean, she's usually going the distance in her fights. These are two guys who can hurt you with one shot, who set things up well, and I think it's going to play out on the feet. I don't think there's going to be a lot of wrestling in this fight.
Interesting. All right, the top of the card as well is Paige VanZant, $1.60 favorite over under in this 2.5 over -220.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think if I was going to bet this one, I'd probably take Paige. You know, Paige, the story on her has changed so much. You know, she comes in and she's got some talent, and then all of a sudden she loses 3 or 4 fights and everyone's like, oh, Paige is terrible. Paige is just terrible. You know, she's just a pretty girl who's doing this for, you know, the paycheck and because the UFC will put her in good spots, but she's not really a fighter. And I really just don't think that's correct. This girl's only 24 years old. She's just developing and she's fought some really tough competition. She's fought Michelle Waterson. She fought Rose Namajunas, who's the champion now. So I think that Paige does have some skill that she's underrated in that regard because the story on her has gone so far to the negative about her skill set. But she is still developing. Now, the same is true about Rachel. You know, she has not really fought a high level of competition in her career. I just feel like I know more about Paige. I know what to expect from her. And also, you know, you have to mention it. Rachel was involved in that domestic, abuse story over the last month, I believe. So that's added stress. So yeah, if I was betting this fight, I'd probably look at Paige.
Well, you mentioned like the few losses for Paige. I mean, that's the beauty of this sport. It's not like one and done. It's, I don't know, it's just accepted in that space that if you lose, it doesn't mean you're a horrible fighter. I've always said to the untrained eye, people see people hitting each other and kicking each other, and as they think aggression and anger, it's not always the case. Sometimes two fighters dislike one another, but I've said it's like literally two stars in hoops playing one-on-one basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And when they like knock the other one out, they're like, hey, nice hit. And, you know, there's like an appreciation of each other. And if you lose, it's not your career is derailed like boxing.
Yeah. And well, and I think the page is an interesting case study in how quickly things can elevate for someone in this sport, you know, and when they elevate, sometimes you're getting those opportunities, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, no one's ever going to feel bad for Paige VanZant because her career has taken off so well, you know, and she's gotten big fights, and she's gotten to headline a card in her hometown, and this and that. But when you are so young, when you're in your early 20s and you're young in your career, you've only had four or five fights. I mean, if you go and look at traditionally the guys who have been very successful in this sport, they had 4 or 5 years where no one had any idea who they were. But
right.
that's where they were developing. That's where they were finding their skill set. Paige is doing it in front of millions of eyeballs all the time, you know? So that's why I just want to, with Paige, I think the narrative has swung so far in the other direction where people are like, oh, she's terrible. Well, it's like, no, you're just seeing her develop in front of your eyes. This is what it looks like to develop. You know, so
like we see in other sports with college hoops or whatever, college basketball.
Exactly. Basketball. You're not watching AAA baseball every day, right?
Well said. Yep. And that speaks to your point about Hardy being such a big favorite that this is still a raw fighter.
Exactly. Greg Hardy is a phenomenal athlete. Beyond that, we don't really know much about his fighting ability.
And the stage gets bigger with all these fighters. I mean, there's just, you know, you're on an island in there, man. I've been in the arena many, many, many times. Things change. With success comes a lot of other unknowns.
Well, and with the Greg Hardy thing, everyone, I hear this over and over again. It's like, oh, well, he played in the NFL, so he's used to the pressure. And I don't want to just dismiss that. There's some truth to that. But
he wasn't quarterback either.
I also think it's very different. It's very different. And there are things in there that are like kind of related to stress, but not really related to stress that he just hasn't experienced yet. He hasn't been really challenged in a fight yet. He hasn't had to go through adversity in a fight yet. He hasn't even had to go to the second round of a fight yet, Doug.
Wow.
So all of that stuff, like those are all unknowns. And you got a guy who's a 5-1 favorite. Now, I'm not saying go out and throw a bunch of money on Crowder because Crowder, he's not a world beater,
mm-hmm.
but if this fight goes past 5 minutes, I mean, we don't know how Greg Hardy's going to react to that.
All right, so what can you tell us about Gillespie and his opponent here?
I won't give him the outright title of this, but he's in the conversation of the best fighter that you don't know.
Mm.
He's very, very good. Sets an incredibly high pace, which that in and of itself is a weapon in MMA. If you can just go, that's a weapon.
I would agree there.
And he has that. He's a 4-time All-American collegiate wrestler. The guy just is he can grind, but he can also hurt you. He's got a high fight IQ. The reason you probably don't know him is just because he's in a division that's absolutely stacked. And he doesn't talk much. He doesn't call out opponents. He's not into trash talk. His big thing is that he likes to go fishing in between his fights. He loves fishing more than
Are we sure he's a millennial?
Fighting.
I mean, he's not worried about his brand here.
I think that's why he's on this card, man. I think the UFC is like, hey, we got to get some eyeballs on this guy because he's really good. And he hasn't had a big name opponent. Yancy Medeiros is a guy that, fans of MMA will recognize. He fought Cowboy Cerrone last year. I think he's in over his head when it comes to the wrestling element of this fight. One thing though, Yancy's a gamer. I mean, he's just a gamer. He's one of those guys who can lose 2.5 rounds of a fight and come back and win
nice.
The third. But yeah, I think that line is probably appropriate. Gillespie is a beast and not many people know who he is.
Well, we have a low total here, 1.5 for the rounds. And you said he gets after it right away. Is that lean under then?
Well, it's tough because in a weird way that relies more on Yancy than it does Gregor.
Makes sense. No, it does make sense.
Because
yeah.
if Yancy is going to, take risks and try to get up and go for submissions and leave himself open to ground strikes, then Gregor may finish him, if it's that kind of fight. But there are times when guys just accept their fate, and they just don't want to get hit. They're like, man, this guy's wrestling me, but I'm not going to like move my arm to get up because then he's going to be punching me in the face, and they just kind of block up. So in a weird way, the ability to finish the fight on the ground in that way, oftentimes it's more the guy on the bottom than it is on the top. I don't know if I would touch this over or under.
Okay. Line sounds about right.
Yeah.
What else stands out to you in terms of maybe good value? Even if they're big favorites, throw them in a parlay, something like that.
The Glover Teixeira Carl Roberson fight is very interesting to me. Glover Teixeira is a guy who's been around for a long time.
Forever.
He's only lost to the cream of the crop, But he's getting older, man. I mean, he's 39. He's had some injuries. He had a shoulder injury last year. It may just be one of those times where it's like, man, Glover's done. It, you know, it, that time may be here where we watch him fight. This guy can beat and he's like, he just ain't got it anymore. But this is a weird circumstance here because Carl Roberson is coming in on a week's notice because Teixeira's original opponent fell off a card. And Roberson is normally a 185er. He's moving up and fighting a 205 now. So you got a smaller guy coming in on 1 week notice. Holidays were just here. We don't know, you know, if Roberson was in the gym or was he enjoying himself on New Year's Eve and Christmas.
That's interesting because the human element is like, of course he is, but these guys are also professional UFC fighters.
So I would, Roberson is a guy I would watch this week. You know, if you're interested in betting this fight, watch some interviews. Get some answers. What was he doing during this time off? How? Why did he take this fight, et cetera?
How fat of the cheeks is he?
Yeah, exactly. Is it a good 20 pounds he's put on, or is it the bad 20 pounds that he's put on for this fight?
We're sure it's Roberson, not Roberson, because I can't figure it out whether it's
I'm going with Roberson.
Okay, because that's my Achilles heel in broadcasting.
Sometimes you just alternate and you say Roberson and the next time you say Roberson, and then no one knows if you're right or wrong.
Well, I've noticed you've gone first name sometimes, too, so you could always do that as well.
I'm all over the place, Doug. Yeah.
Well, you're the insider. Cerrone?
I don't know what to do with that fight.
Yeah.
I really don't know what to do with that fight. Cerrone is moving down in weight. It's a tough cut for him. He's been there a million times. He fought at 155 for years and years and years and years, but he hasn't done so since, I believe, 2014 was the last time he was there. So this is the first time maybe it was 2015, but either way, it's the first time in a few years he's cutting that weight. It's not an easy cut. I think he'll make the weight, but it's just another factor for him. And this is a tough fight, man. Alexander Hernandez is another guy who not many people know, but he's good. And that's why it's like when Cerrone took this fight, like, so here's my reaction to even this fight being made. I was like, why would Cerrone take this fight? It's a tough fight, and no one knows who this Alexander Hernandez guy is. But that said, Cerrone he's got 21 wins in the UFC, so I don't want to bet against him. I mean, you're down money.
We just talked earlier about value of experience.
Yeah, I don't see that playing in here. I mean, Hernandez is a well-rounded guy. He came into the UFC on short notice. It didn't matter. He had an amazing debut against Beneil Dariush. He's just a confident kid, man. He's hungry. Mm-hmm. He's 26. Donald Cerrone's 35. There's no way that I would bet Cowboy. Let's put it that way. I would not bet Cowboy. There's just too many factors there. Age, the hungry opponent, the fact he's going back down in weight. I just wouldn't take Cowboy. If you want to take something on Hernandez, I can understand it, but I don't think there's much value in the line. I mean, he's almost a 2-1 favorite.
All right, the over-under there, 1.5 rounds, over minus 150.
I'll go over on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I think it'll take a little time. I think Cowboy will respect him, and yeah, I mean, Cowboy has had those throwaway fights where he just he gets hurt early, and he's a slow starter occasionally, but I would probably go over.
It looks like the line came out with a bad number, and because there's pretty strong juice here on the Ortiz fight, with over-unders 2.5 with the over minus 310. You don't see that very often for a round. They would just make it 3.5 and shade the under.
Mm.
What do you make of that fight?
You know, Benavidez is the better fighter. They fought
40 favorite. Yep.
They fought before. They fought, I want to say, like 3 years ago, and they went the distance then. And, you know, it's not like either one of these guys has changed a whole lot since then. So that may explain the juice that you're seeing, because we've seen this fight. We've seen how it plays out. And if you're like me and you're like, well, Dustin Ortiz hasn't changed that much and Joseph Benavidez hasn't changed that much, then you probably expect a similar fight. And Ortiz is a wrestler, you know, and Joe is both, but I could see there being wrestling in this fight, and obviously that eats up time. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me that people like the over.
So when we look at the card here, so the over in that fight, obviously it's shaded minus 310. So in terms of value or worth a flyer kind of thing, the Cejudo fight under 4.5 plus money, Page minus $1.60. If you had to bet it, that's where you would go in that fight. Worth a little bit of a flyer on Crowder, plus $4. And the Cerrone fight over, you like that over minus 150? Did we cover that?
Sure. Yeah, we could throw that on there.
Okay. And the Gillespie, you didn't really want to commit to the over-under prop there because it all depends. Yeah. Medeiros.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that one.
Hmm. And Teixeira, did you like it? Do you like the minus 120?
No, if I was going to take someone, I would take Roberson.
Roberson even money?
I actually would, yeah. And I mean, you're taking a shot there because Teixeira is the more accomplished fighter. I mean, he's proven it. And he was actually supposed to fight this weekend when Roberson wasn't. So that's one, like I said, I would try to get a read on Roberson right, as the content comes out.
I love it. Cause that was my next question. Like final thought here is going into these cause there's a lot of access, whether it be on ESPN, ESPN Plus,
yeah,
even the UFC websites and other media outlets. There's tons of interviews there. Mm-hmm. What do you look for? Now you obviously have different access and more exposure cause you can talk to trainers. You can talk to various members of the team.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a regular consumer and fan of the UFC and you have it stops at all the access that's put it on the internet and everywhere else, what are you keeping an eye on from a handicapping standpoint the last few days here before fight night?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the obvious one is the weight cut, and sometimes it's glaring. You can tell a guy's having a bad cut. Sometimes you can't really. You know, sometimes they look good and then something just goes wrong at the final stages. And but you always get to see them. You know, I mean. The UFC, I don't know, maybe some people don't even know this, but they actually have two weigh-ins. They have a morning weigh-in.
Yeah.
And then they have a fake weigh-in in the afternoon. And the fake weigh-in is only for photos. You know, you get a photo of these two staring at each other. And
but
some
those,
people...
The afternoon weigh-in counts, though, right?
It does not.
Really?
The morning weigh-in counts. So by the afternoon, they're standing on a fake scale, and they weigh nothing close
I didn't even
to
know
what
that.
They weighed. Yeah, I know. No one knows it. So watch the morning weigh-in. See how they look on the scale.
How do our listeners watch the morning weigh-in?
Oh, great news. You can watch it on Twitter. Well, around the pay-per-views and then this weekend's fight, you can go on Twitter and you can follow myself, Chael Sonnen, Ariel Helwani, ESPN MMA now has a new account, and we'll put it up on Twitter, but it's a live show and it goes for 2 hours, and
yeah,
it's myself, Chael, and Ariel, and it's
awesome.
Multiple cameras. So you get a good look at what's happening on a scale, and then we'll be talking about it in real time. And for 2 hours, I mean, Chael, Ariel, and I will go over every little detail of this card
yeah,
you could ever want.
And yeah. all the information you need. Good, man. Well, awesome catching up.
Yeah.
Good insight here, obviously. We'll look forward to all your stuff. And your Twitter handle is?
At B Okamoto ESPN.
Okay. So you can, all the links that Brett talked about throughout the podcast, especially week coverage this coming weekend, E+. Everywhere else, we are obviously ramping up our UFC coverage. And this is big for us, right? And this is big for the sport to be partnered with ESPN?
For sure, yeah. I mean, just from the sense of, you know, ESPN putting it on SportsCenter more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was on Get Up this morning, and nothing's changed about the sport. It's still the same sport.
Right.
But I want to put it in front of, you know, more eyeballs, casual sports fans. And I think it's huge. I think it's big, big, big for the sport.
It's crazy. Before I moved to Vegas in 2005, I was working in Iowa, Quad Cities, Iowa, which is where the Miletich Fighting Academy was. So Matt Hughes, Jens Pulver, I mean, a lot of those dudes, and Tim Sylvia. I mean, they were bouncing at bars on the weekend.
Yeah.
For like $50, $100.
Yeah.
In addition to traveling. So I was like covering this fight stuff all the time. And when I moved to Vegas, I connected with the PR team and Dana, and then it was crazy how not empty things were, but like the media now, the media row and media scrum compared to what it was in 2005, as you would imagine. This is, you know, the Ultimate Fighter was their big sort of, Dana called it the Trojan horse.
Mm-hmm.
Get it on reality TV, get it on Spike TV,
mm-hmm,
and then people start realizing that, hey, man, this is a lot of fans here.
Oh, it's been cool as a journalist to cover it because you've covered all those stages. I mean, we've seen a sport like grow up, mm-hmm, within the last 15 to 25 years. So it's been crazy for me because it's just you're fighting to even like it wasn't even legal in New York until 2 years ago.
Right, right.
The sport was not legal in New York.
Yeah, I remember
York.
John McCain once called it human cockfighting back
two years ago. They couldn't even go to Madison Square Garden, and now they're on ESPN. So yeah, it's fun as a journalist to cover.
Much like gambling, illegal everywhere. Now
there you go. Yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking
it's being
about.
Being accepted. All right, man. Well, great seeing you as always, and look forward to connecting in the near future.
You got it.
My checks are always super heavyweight.
Kicking is for losers.
Thanks to Brett Okamoto. I hope Murray appreciates we can weave in kicking is for losers in the MMA stuff.
Yeah, and on a side note to that, I see on Twitter a lot of different places are using our kicking us for losers and dropping boxes of ZD's jargon.
Well, the ZD thing is we rejuvenated from Sopranos, but I believe Murray uses the kicking for is for losers out in other gambling shows. So I don't know if they're stealing ours. I think it's a Murray thing.
Okay, we'll give a pass.
I think we're okay.
Right.
I think we're okay because it's Murray's ownership. I told him to get a trademark. He's working on it. I don't know if he's working on it, but I hope he is.
He better.
So yeah, man, good stuff. Any confessions of a non-gambler in the UFC betting talk?
You know what? When you were saying that some of the matches are being shaded, I believe that. What does that mean?
That's a good question. That means it's just the money line is that way. So instead of a pick'em, if it's -130, it's shaded to the, in this case, over. If we're talking over, -4.5, -135.
Okay. So and that's a
so
term.
So it's a slight favorite meaning.
Okay.
It's shaded that way.
And that's typically used in the fight space more than the.
Yeah, or just anything that's got a money line. That's got a money line. I'm trying to think. Probably on an over/under, I guess. Now that I'm thinking out loudly with that. Okay. Rather than a side, like in this case, if there was a person like Paige VanZant is favored, she's a slight favorite instead of shaded that way. I think over under something that it's not, you know, you can say it's favored to go over, but I think it's shaded to go over is sort of that way.
Okay.
It's a better,
okay,
more appropriate term.
How about your action on the Australian Open? How's that?
I do have tennis people. I need to reach out to them and get some, a lot of dogs. It's always fun to bet the long shots. So.
Always. One more question for you, and I know that everybody's here or that listened was for the MMA stuff, but there is another boxing fight going down on the 19th. Manny Pacquiao and Adrian Broner. What are your thoughts? I'm putting you on the spot here.
I have no thoughts. Let's get Murray's thoughts on. He's a big boxing guy as well. We'll get his thoughts on that as well. And some of the UFC, I know he's got a UFC pick as well. We'll get his input.
Awesome. Looking forward to that.
All right, Kai, good connecting, and let's reconvene for football. Talk later this week.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.